We begin now in their continuing series of Tales of the Baal Shem Tov with a long tale which will be divided because of its length in three installments, which we'll call Saved from a Fate Worse than Death. The story is taken from Sefer HaZichronis, the book of memoirs of the previous Lubavitcher Rebbe. The village of Sharya boasted 50 Jewish families, several of which were headed by Torah scholars. Among the other inhabitants of the village were tradesmen, simple balabatim, who had taken Torah scholars for sons-in-law, agreeing to support them that they might be free to pursue their Torah studies. These lamdonim, these scholars, created a very favorable atmosphere and even a strong yearning and desire for Torah study among the townsfolk. So, in spite of the fact that the majority of the townsfolk were simple, unlettered individuals who could explain a chapter in Chumash at best, nevertheless, an atmosphere of intellectual striving could be felt. In contrast to these people, there were nevertheless others who were completely illiterate. The few prayers that they knew by rote were themselves recited full of mistakes. All of the people, however, were very good people, faithful to their faith and heritage, who observed the mitzvahs with all their particulars. Rav Shmuel Akiva, an ascetic, God-fearing man, was the rabbi of this town of Sharya. He had accepted the position after his father-in-law, the previous rabbi, had expressed this wish before his death. Reb Chaim Moshe, the former rabbi, had seen in his son-in-law a pious individual who was also blessed with the power of oratory. At the age of 20, the young Shmuel Akiva was already an accomplished lecturer, a darshan, who, by his God-fearing lectures, instilled awe of God and reverence of the Almighty into his audience, scholars and simple folk alike, as he described the punishments that awaited those who strayed from the path of righteousness, as well as the rewards for those who are faithful in their adherence to Torah and mitzvahs. Rav Shmuel Akiva himself would fast from Shabbos to Shabbos. In the summer, he would lie upon the ground naked, that the insects might bite his flesh. In the winter, he would roll in the snow unclad, in order to mortify his body, so that it not act as a hindrance or impediment for his spiritual yearning and his spiritual journey. He continued all these practices after he was appointed rabbi. As rabbi, the Shmuel Akiva preached to the scholarly and the unlearned alike, not realizing that each category needed a different approach so that they may be met at their level, so that his words would have the most positive impact upon them. Rav Shmuel Akiva paid little or no attention to the needs of the masses. If they came to hear his lectures, well and good. And if they did not understand what he said, it was just their loss. This was then the accepted attitude toward the common folk, and no one gave it any thought. Yaakov Karpel was a simple but honest fellow who typified the unlearned tradesmen of the city. He earned his livelihood by peddling his wares to the Gentiles of the surrounding area during the entire week. On Friday, he would return with his week's earning and go straight to the rabbi's house. There, he would give the rabbi money for the various charitable causes that the city sponsored, such as helping the sick, aiding impoverished brides, supporting Torah scholars, and the like. Only after he distributed a considerable sum for tzedakah would he then return home and hand over the rest of his earnings to his wife to pay back her debts and cover her expenses for the money that she had laid out during the week while he was not there. After that, he would go to the merchitz, the public bathhouse, and prepare himself for the Shabbos, removing all the dust and grime of his hard week and preparing himself physically, mentally, and spiritually for the arrival of the Shabbos Malkasa, the Shabbos Queen. Yankov Karpel could not differentiate between an aleph and a beis, for he was totally illiterate. The few prayers that he knew, he said by heart, and they were full of mistakes. He knew the Shema and the Shemoneh Esrei by heart, and these prayers he said with much feeling, sincerity, and devotion. Wherever he prayed, be it on the road, in his home, or in shul, and whenever he prayed, be it a weekday prayer, or a Shabbos prayer, or a Yom Tov prayer, a holiday prayer, his davening, his supplications and prayers poured forth from him with much kavona, with much ardor, feeling, and fervor, with much enthusiasm, and with tremendous love of Hashem. Brocha, Yankov Karpel's wife, was also a simple woman, but one who was scrupulously careful in the observance of all the mitzvahs. She herself was actually the daughter of a Talmud Chacham, but her father had died when she was still a young child. The community had looked after her and had arranged her marriage with Yankov Karpel. The couple lived a contented life together, which was marred, however, by the fact that they had no children. For many years, Barocha had been barren, and when she had finally given birth, her children, Nishtogedach, had died in infancy. Yankov Karpel would often meet other Jews on his travels, who, like him, also were wont to go from city to city and from village to village and hamlet to hamlet to earn their livelihood. He once came across a Jew who was headed in the same direction as he, and so they walked along together. But the man was not given to conversation, as he was engrossed in his own thoughts. Yankov Karpel was puzzled. Here was an individual walking along with him, evidently thinking and speaking to himself, something which Yankov Karpel could not figure out. "What are you mumbling to yourself?" asked Yankov Karpel. "Well," the man said, "at home I have many svarim, many holy writings, many books, which I study all the time. But on the road, I cannot burden myself with heavy gemaras, with heavy folios of Talmud, and must confine myself with repeating what I know by heart," explained his companion. And he now continued his study of Mishnayos and Gemara aloud in a most beautiful tune. Yankov Karpel was deeply touched by the man's ability to study, even while walking along the road. And suddenly, Yankov Karpel burst into tears. "What are you crying about?" asked his companion with surprise. "Have I not reason to cry?" answered Yankov Karpel tearfully. "I am a total amaretz, a total ignoramus, an illiterate boor. I can't even identify one Hebrew letter. I don't know Aleph, Beis, anything. When I just heard and saw you display such tremendous knowledge, I was just seized with a tremendous jealousy. Why? I would be ready this very minute to give away years of my life if I could only know that which you know in the Torah." His companion, whose name was Reb Hirsch Leib, comforted him and promised him to teach him when the Aleph Beis when they reached the city. Yankov Karpel was in utter ecstasy upon hearing the offer. But Reb Hirsch Leib calmed him down and said to him, "There is a condition, however. I have one restriction that I must demand of you. I wish this to remain a secret. No one beside your wife must know that we are studying together." Of course, Yankov Karpel agreed to this condition, and when the two reached the city, it suddenly began pouring cats and dogs. Yankov Karpel and Reb Hirsch Leib were forced to find shelter in the first Beis HaMedrash that stood at the edge of town. And it was in this Beis HaMedrash that they began studying. The months passed, and Reb Hirsch Leib's student, Yankov Karpel, showed quite fair progress. He was able to read, and even was able to explain several words of what he was reading. Reb Hirsch stayed in the Beis HaMedrash during this time and attracted no special attention, for his appearance, his outward mien, was that of a very simple Jew. The city of Sharya was not much different from other cities in its sense of hospitality. And so it was taken for granted that someone should invite Reb Hirsch Leib for Shabbos. And so came the first Shabbos, and Reb Hirsch Leib was duly invited to one of the family's Shabbos table. But Reb Hirsch Leib refused the invitation on the pretext that he never ate by someone else's table. And when it came the second and third and fourth week, and each time the invitations which were so graciously offered were graciously turned down, Reb Hirsch Leib was left alone for the remainder of his stay. The townspeople concluded that this wandering Jew had decided to remain in their city during the winter until the weather improved. No one paid him any special attention, and Reb Hirsch Leib as well did not concern himself with the townspeople. But for the simple people, Reb Hirsch Leib always had a kind word. He paid particular attention to them and tried to encourage them in their ways, inspiring their downtrodden souls and instilling within them trust and hope in the Almighty. Hirsch Leib would say to them, "It is forbidden to be depressed. You are important. All of Israel is dear to Hashem. When God told Moshe Rabbeinu Daber el b'nei Yisrael, speak to the children of Israel. God did not make any differences between them. He included the unlearned Jew with the scholar, and included them equally, for they are all sons to Hashem, and one does not differentiate between children. Moreover, Reb Hirschleib would say to the simple folk, it is never too late to learn. Whatever you fail to learn in childhood can be learned and accomplished right now. But who will teach us, they wondered. Reb Hirschleib offered to teach them himself, promising to start from Olive Base, where most of them were up to, and continue on from there. The Anoshim Pshutim, the common folk, could not believe their ears. This idea was totally new. It was completely novel. They were used to seeing learned Jews sitting and studying. But these were men who already knew Gemara and were able to study on their own. But the idea of a man who had not known an Aleph from a Beis being able to sit down and study as the others did, why, this was altogether novel and unheard of. Until now, no one had paid them any attention whatsoever, or had shown any concern for their spiritual welfare. And now, a learned Jew suddenly appears in their midst, who actually strongly yearned to teach them. The people were deeply moved and joyfully agreed to become the Hirschleib's Talmidim, to become his disciples. Vayve Zalman's Beis HaMedrash, as the synagogue was known, stood at the edge of the city. It had been built by a childless man who had wished to perpetuate his name in an honorable fashion. And it was here that Reb Hirschleib stayed. And it was here, too, that he began his class of Olive Beis for adults. The lessons inspired the men pupils with new energy and zest for life. Now they were learning Torah. They too were participating in that which was most precious to the Jewish people. They were now full of hope, and no longer did they feel themselves deserted and cast aside, as if they did not belong, God forbid, to the Jewish people. The Hirschleib continued his stay in Sharia for 5 full years. During the entire time, he instructed his new Talmidim, teaching them Aleph Beis at first, and then teaching them Ivrit, how to read, how to daven, how to pray, until the new spirit of the Hamoin, of the masses, was so full of hope and enthusiasm that it could be felt within the air. A new spirit had entered into the city of Sharia. But Reb Hirschleib was not satisfied just with academic instruction. He also educated his Talmidim in Midas Tovis, in good character traits, such as edelkeit, refinement, gentility, to deal honestly with one another, to respect and love one's fellow Jew. And this he extended not only to the menfolk, but he also taught the women as well. He telling them and teaching them that they were to respect one another and to live peacefully together. During the entire time that Reb Hirschleib stayed in Sharia, he never once took a penny from anyone, nor benefited from another person at all. He never ate at anyone's house, neither on a weekday, nor even on Shabbos or Yom Tov. if he was not occupied with his Talmidim, with his students, he would be studying on his own. For Herr Schlaib wasted not a minute of his precious time. All the while, he supported himself from trade with the neighboring villages and was completely self-sufficient. The news spread quickly in the city that someone called Reb Herr Schlaib was using Five Zalman's Beis Medrash as a cheder for adults, teaching grown men how to read, just as the Melamed Dardike, the teacher of young children, taught his own young students the Aleph Beis. Reb Shmuel Akiva, the rabbi of Sharya, also heard of this, and once decided to pay the class a visit. He appeared at the Beis HaMedrash one day as Reb Herr Schlaib was in the midst of his lesson. A dozen grown men sat at a table, their siddurim open before them, and Reb Herr Schlaib was explaining the meaning of a certain prayer. Several of his students were old men with long white beards, but they all sat engrossed in their lesson. As the rabbi entered, the Herr Schlaib and his students rose in his honor. The rabbi advanced to Reb Hirsch and held out his hand in greeting, and suddenly, overwhelmed by his emotions, seized Reb Herr Schlaib's hand and kissed it. This demonstration of admiration for Reb Herr Schlaib's actions left an indelible impression upon all the men there. Reb Shmuel Akiva wished to define his mixed feelings and gave the following parable. There was once a kind and wise king who loved his people and cared for their every want. Unlike other kings who used their subjects for their own benefit, this was a king who used his own riches and his own insight to benefit the people in his kingdom. The king would set aside visiting hours 3 times a day, during which he was available to the public. The king tried to minister to the personal desires of anyone who would just come and present his request. There was a certain street in the capital on which there lived only mute people, people who unfortunately were incapable of speech. These people were deeply grieved that they could not be received by the king when he made himself available to the public, for they had no way of communicating with him and explaining their requests and their desires except by using awkward gestures which no one could understand. When a certain very famous doctor heard of their plight, he agreed to heal these mute individuals and restore to them their power of speech. When they had been cured, they went to the king and presented their petitions before him verbally. The king was utterly amazed to see his dumb subjects speaking, and was so happy that they were now able to speak that he fulfilled their requests gladly. Not only that, but the king also invited the physician to appear before him, and so grateful was he to the physician for enabling these subjects of his to come before him and express their needs and their desires, that the king showered the physician with many, many gifts. My dear brothers, said Rabbi Shmuel Akiva to Rabbi Hirsch and his pupils, like the people in this story, you too were dumb for many years. You did not know one letter from another, nor the meaning of a Jewish word. You served Hashem in silence and with a mute pain in your hearts, until there finally arrived the great physician, Rabbi Hirsch Leib, who came and healed you. By teaching you to read, he opened your eyes and endowed you with a new light. Now you too can serve Hashem completely, like all the other Jews. May Hashem bless you, concluded Rabbi Shmuel Akiva, as he finished his message, and grant all of you all of your heart's desires for the best.